Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. My guest today is Harold Barrett from the band Immanence. A couple things you should know about them. They just put out an album called The Black, which was produced and mixed by the wonderful Henrik Ud. And also, they are coming here to the U.S. on tour. Right now, we're recording this on April 5th, 2024. This spring, they will be here in the U.S. First headline U.S. tour ever, and also first full U.S. tour ever, which is a nice way to start, right? All right, let's get into it. Here goes. Harold Barrett, welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad we were finally able to put this together.
Yeah, me too. We had a few challenges, getting together just to be able to see each other here online.
I know, but the universe will not stop us.
Exactly. Yeah. They won't. I mean, we're just fully determined. Now I'll be looking forward, really, really have. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, likewise. And so your band's interesting because the first time I heard your name, I was expecting a very different kind of band. I was expecting like brutal death metal or something.
Oh yeah.
The name like Immanence. Yeah. I was just expecting like the most extreme thing. And then it came on and it was like really, really lush soundscapes, yeah. And like beautiful vocals, yeah. and just real songs. It was, yeah, totally different than what I was expecting, and which is cool because I like being surprised. I'm sick of predicting or judging something before hearing it. By the way, I like brutal death metal, but I'm sick of predicting what something is and being right. I like it when I'm surprised. So,
really disappointed.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No, not at all. It was a pleasant surprise, actually.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear what you're saying. I don't really know what kind of label to put on the band anymore. Really. I suppose we're somewhere in the metalcore field. I mean, and then we can always go into debate on what is metalcore today, really. Because I believe that the emerging bands that are really getting big now and are maybe associated still with that sort of scene that we are also somehow in, maybe due to the time where, we were existing or started out as a band, and references in our music and the elements. So I would say that, yeah, people would associate us with being metalcore. But my point is, bands today that are really making it big in these times, they're not really metalcore. I mean, they have maybe those elements and so. But I believe that, especially with the new album, I must say that we have been able to kind of gather influences throughout, well, all our career and upbringing or whatever it is. And I believe that maybe you can hear some elements from brutal death metal. And
stuff. Oh yeah, obviously, definitely.
Yeah. Because I believe we're kind of a heavy band, but not only, obviously, I think we have two extremes. I mean, that's how, when I try to maybe explain what Immanence is, what Immanence sounds like, and especially now with our new songs. And so I believe we work with polar opposites, really. And we're not really afraid to take things to those two extremes. We can go pretty much as hard and heavy and brutal and dark as we want to, because it's a big essence in our music. But then there is this other side as well that I would say maybe is more, or actually very, well, more serene. It's more serene and it's calm and it's beautiful, and there are melodies and there are arrangements and so on. It's sort of just looking at on the technical production side of things, we have, a modern approach in terms of like modern instruments or whatever it can be in our soundscapes and so, and then we have this, the oldest instruments, really, as we're working a lot with strings and strings arrangements, especially due to Eddie playing the violin and so. And I believe that Immanence is somewhere here, always in the middle of these two,
Would you get bored if it was only one thing?
Yeah, terribly, I would say. I think we're definitely all about layers in that way, and more depth into our sound and our music. nothing wrong with just being with one thing or the other. Obviously not. You know, I have a very wide musical taste, and I can enjoy bands and artists that are just one thing or the other. That's absolutely fine, and you can understand that, and you can just, even if we're talking about something like, let's just say a band like AC/DC, you know, they've been able to write the same album over, like, I don't know, 40, 50 years or something, and it still works. How cool is that, right? But we're not really that kind of band, you know. We're always trying to be evolving ourselves and trying to look at the person that we are right now, or the persons that we are, and how that differs with time with each and every album. And I believe we probably need to be able to throw in influences in our sound that come from different places, because they are equally important to us. I grew up listening to metal and hard rock and whatever it can be, but it's not the only thing I've been listening to or has been meaningful to me. So
when you sit down to write, is it a conscious thing of, we're going to blend this and this, we're bringing in these elements, or is it just kind of an organic thing? You sit down to write, things start happening, music starts, I guess, materializing, and you figure out a direction.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely more organic. So as with the case of a lot of bands writing together, we kind of start with the basics, really. And I think it's quite common. It's me and Eddie, our vocalist, who are writing the music. And usually I have maybe a basic idea, you know, and it can be small, it can be big or something. It can be really very in its finished form or so. But the important part is that it's setting a tone, right? It has to set a tone. And usually it is, well, guitar based, and, you know, I work with drums and everything and all the instruments behind it and so on. And that can turn into very much different sort of directions with it. It has to really set a tone. It has to say something in a very raw format, you know. And I think me and Eddie have probably reached a point now where we are able to kind of mutually understand each other. Well, we know, right, that this is worth working on, and that we just sort of know it. We feel it, really.
I have a question the rawest version of a song. So, because you have, you use guitar in several different ways, I noticed, in the band. And lots of times it'll be just an accompaniment, and all of the real harmony and melody is happening in the other instruments or in a lead. But sometimes not in guitar whatsoever. It could be violin, it could be whatever other arrangement you have, and the guitar riff is perfect. It's perfect. It's exactly what it should be. But it's not like a riff. It's an accompaniment. So which I think is awesome in the right context. So when you're writing those types of parts, what are you writing? Also a basic version of the arrangement that's going to go over it, or are you just starting with like the bursts with the double kick and the rhythm guitar?
Yeah. I would say, for my personal part, it's I like to not have too many tools to work with when it's in the first creative state. I like to keep things very simple. You know, I don't want to have too many. It's like I want to keep my options sort of limited, because it needs to happen fast, right?
Yes.
And then of course I can spend a lot of time on trying to develop something into like perfecting something a bit more, but I tend to really try to keep things very few basic components that work together, that speak the same language. And then I think it's mostly when me and Eddie are working together, if we feel like this is a song where we need to bring out the vocals, or where we need to maybe focus a little bit more on top line arrangement, or we need a chorus that has melodies or something, where we work with more melodies vocal wise in the verses or whatever it can be. And I think in that way, it's very interactive. And then maybe I would tend to write my parts so that it completes the element that is in focus, being in strings or being in vocals or whatever it can be, or sometimes even just synth stuff or so. But But then on the other hand, we've had cases where we had a song that felt pretty good, and like a song called Death by Thousand Cuts on the album, which is definitely not like guitar driven in this way, but it was all fine, intro, verse, bridge, and so on. And then the chorus came and just flopped. But what we had made there was a really cool vocal thing. It wasn't about the text and stuff, but just how it sounded and everything. So I just
What do you mean by flopped? What do you mean by flopped?
The first version of the chorus, it wasn't good. You know, it went to that point and it was just, oh no, okay, just, you know, doesn't make it. So I just took that home and rearranged everything behind it, really, and just wrote new guitars and drums and bass and so, and that's really all that needed. And we just removed all other like synth stuff or top line other elements and just had guitar, bass, drums, vocals. And that's everything that was needed for that part. And it's still just backing up, you know, just playing chords there, but it just seems to how some really work and become effective in its, you know, in its entity in that way. I think I tried to maybe approach it more as a songwriter than just as a guitarist, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, after all, especially with how your songs end up, I think that it's this interesting thing you just said that is not contradictory, but I think someone might think it is, but I don't think it is. Saying limiting the tools, but then in order to not get distracted by too many options and being able to write quickly, but then also not focusing necessarily on guitar and focusing as a songwriter, which I think some people could be like, well, what tools then if you're not focusing on guitar? But I think that to me what it means is you're trying to keep it to where the only thing you can focus on is writing and writing quickly, and you can't focus on creating an arrangement instead of writing, like a full-on arrangement. Like you have to keep the song moving forward at all times in that stage.
Yeah, I guess so, but I can't really say that this is always the scenario. I think this is a common way for me when I develop my ideas, but sometimes I just get sort of just really inspired with writing something that is way more arranged in that way, and I can add my harmonies, and I can add my overlays, and I can add my, you know, quad tracked guitars or whatever it can be, and it's just, you know, oh, it's just there, because you have to get to a point. I cannot really explain it better than saying that sometimes less is more and sometimes more is more. Right, and I think that is just applying to everything, every sort of aspect of your songwriting in this way. And I think it's just about the basic ideas that can sort of set the frameworks of what you can do as an instrumentalist in this way. If there is an idea that is calling for maybe my origins as like a very aspiring guitarist who listened to my favorite acts, and I can sort of live out my, you know, my riff fantasies or whatever it is, and I can just go crazy with whatever it is, then that's cool. I can do that. Then we can still make that sound like an Eminence track. But that doesn't need to be the case always. And I think it's important to be able to show variety and knowing when it's time to take more place or give more place.
So it sounds like there's a lot of judgment involved, meaning judgment of, you know, when it's good, you just have to feel it. Or when you sit down to write and you know that you should arrange the shit out of this part and really, really build it up now instead of later. It's kind of, I'm guessing that that's just something that in the moment happens. Like you're working on something and the light bulb turns on over your head, and you're inspired, and you know that now's the moment to basically build this arrangement as opposed to find the next part in the song.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's just about daring to be very intuitive and and just trying to tr- trying to go with an idea, even if it's an idea that you haven't really tried before. But I believe sometimes not to try to make things harder than they are. I mean, if you hear something over a part or so, or something's following up as a development of what you just wrote, then try that out, you know, try it out and see if it works. I don't think there is I don't need to keep myself to formula where I have to have very few elements and the basics just need to work, you know, because sometimes I can also get a bit taken by surprise. On this album, we've had cases where there'd been a riff in a song or something. I felt like that riff is stupid. It's stupid. It's not cool. It doesn't speak to me. It's not really, why did I write it? It was just my first idea. Why did I keep it there? And then maybe, you know, having someone to co-write with, Eddie might say, hey, just hang on. It's actually cool. I got this idea. And then, you know, he might have some sort of violin thing over it. And I'm like, okay, now it works really. So yeah, sometimes you just never know.
So what you just said about coming up with something that you're not totally happy with, the thought of it was just my first idea. Okay, so I want to talk about that for a little bit. One thing I've noticed I've also noticed this when producing people, that they do also in the Riff Hard community, when people are talking about writing, I've noticed that they do this thing, we all do, I think, where one problem that I think writers have, especially when they're first learning and trying to get a lot better. I mean, you're always trying to get better, but I think it's definitely in the earlier stages, people will just go with the first thing they write. So they open their DAW and they sit down to write. The first thing they write is the first part of the song. The second thing they write is the second part of the song. The third thing they write is the third part of the song, and so on. And they don't question it. That's just, it's kind of like if you shot a movie from start to finish, which we know movies don't get shot start to finish. But then also I've noticed that sometimes people will not keep the first thing they write ever, because they have it in their head that you always have to develop things. I do this as well, but sometimes it comes out exactly perfect the first time, or like 95% of the way there. And I feel like you have to develop the judgment to be able to know the difference, to know, okay, these first three things I wrote, I was just kind of warming up. Like, this is not there yet. Or these first three things I wrote are fucking magical. It's just one of those days, keeping it. So how did you develop that? Or what's some advice you would have for writers to develop that kind of judgment?
I think you need just to be able to allow yourself to also write shitty songs, really, or bad stuff. Really, don't be afraid of that. And because, I mean, it's like, well, something that I learned maybe throughout the years is not to be, to put too much emphasis on the idea that you're having right here, right now. Of course, I'm also very stubborn. When I feel like there is something here and I can't really find it, you know, I can spend sometimes, but it might sound contradictory to what we spoke about before, and in trying to keep things fast and limiting your options and so, but if I feel like something is there and I can't really find it, I can spend a lot of time on it, you know, and I really want to see what there is, you know, like leave no stone unturned and so. But something that I learned over the years is probably like, you know what the surfers say, like there will always be another wave. You know?
Yes.
There will be another wave. And I think that's how it is, really. You don't have a riff bank sort of that is just sitting there and you have your precious 12 ideas or whatever it is, and then it's just going to run out. I think you need to develop that trust in yourself that you are sort of the, I don't know, let's call it the human capital in this way, you know, as a musician or as a creator or whatever it can be. I can just relax for a while and I don't need to feel that I have to spitball like plenty of ideas every day or something, or I don't need to write something great every day or even every week or something, but because I know that sooner or later I'm going to find it. And there is a bit of confidence and trust in yourself that you need to build up. And I think that might come from maybe also being recognized that some people actually liked what you were putting out there, really, and that you actually got some recognition from doing what you believed in, really. And maybe you just can't wait for the world to discover you or so. So I think the only way is to just keep on writing and do it bravely, really, and dare to just try out new ideas and try to look for your own thing. And I believe that when you're setting out too much to, when you're setting out and you have too much of a goal, you're kind of in trouble, I guess. Maybe you can have an idea in your head that this is something I would like to achieve. But when you have to say that, when you're saying to yourself that this new album, this new sound has to be in this direction or that direction, it needs to be heavier, it needs to be more commercial, it needs to be this or that or whatever, then you're already kind of blocked yourself a little bit, I think. And I believe then it's really easy to judge and judge from the wrong reasons also. So I believe that, you know, I think there is an interview or something with Ed Sheeran that is really, really great, where he said that like songwriting is sort of like, you know, like bringing water from a well, you know, these old things where you just kind of pump the water. It's like, if it's been there and it stood like old and rusty for a while, and when you start it, it's just going to come out a bunch of shitty, rusty water, you know. But then after sometimes the water is going to be clear. It's going to be just, everything is clear and everything is going to work out well.
That's a great thought.
Yeah. And I recognize myself so much in that, because, you know, don't leave it there to rust. You know, keep it fresh all the time, really, and trust yourself, because there's going to be another wave, you know.
Dude, that quote by Ed Sheeran is actually pretty perfect, because yeah. I've noticed if I don't write for a while, the first few things I write are garbage. And
yeah.
And it's important to not let that get to me. It's important to just realize this is how it goes. This is part of the process. It's going to be garbage for like a week or two. Yeah. And then the good stuff will happen. It'll happen. Just trust it.
Yeah. And I think I think it's important that you have proven to yourself that you can go through that and that you could make it out on the other side and something great came out of it. I know these days, the first sessions that me and Eddie are having together are probably not going to really end up in anything. Probably not. But it's okay. It's a part of the process. And we need to go through that. And I need to be able to sit here at home and pick up my guitar and spend a day of writing or something and not really be able to use that. But if I enjoyed it and if I discovered something that later on is going to be of value, well, that's perfect. I mean, then it was actually of great value. I think looking at it from a bigger perspective, really. I mean, not taking things too serious right here, right now.
Kevin Thrasher, really great producer and songwriter. He's also plays guitar in Escape the Fate. But he, on here, actually, he told me that he has this thing called writing for the trash. And basically, when he sits down to write every single day, he's writing for the trash. He's trying to write something that he's going to throw away, because then he's not stuck in this idea of it has to be a hit. It has to be great. It has to be the best song I've ever written. He just tries to write something bad. And what he said was that basically even if you try to write something bad, eventually something really good will come out. It's just going to happen if you do that often enough. And then other times, you know, you will sit down and something great will come out, and it'll just happen if you write frequently and try to divorce yourself of the idea of it having to be great. And you just get comfortable with the idea of getting rid of the bad stuff. It'll also raise your level over time, because if you're continually developing only the really good stuff, throwing away the bad stuff, that's definitely will up your level. for several reasons.
Yeah, definitely. To me, that is a double-edged sword, I would say. I've actually never tried going in with the intention of like, I'm going to write something really bad. I've never tried that before, but it's interesting. I think but sometimes I know that when I've spent a lot of time on just a small idea, I've been able to just stumble upon something. And it was like, oh, that was what I was looking for. For example, there is a song we put out a few years ago called Infectious. And it's, I remember that this just main riff, which is also the chorus and the lead guitar over it, it just took me forever to find. And it's not particularly complicated or so. I believe that it has something that is ours, really, and that I don't really recognize in anyone else's sound. But that took me like 7 hours just to come across, really. And I tried so many different versions, and I remember that I still just felt I was never really happy with it. But there was something there, and I couldn't really just, you know, put my finger on it. What is it that I'm looking for here? But so I just wouldn't really yield because I wanted it to be good. I wanted it to be great. I knew what I wanted it sort of to feel like. And then all of a sudden, it was just there. And I was like, oh, wow. And then the rest of the song, it just opened. It just, the road was paved in that way. And funny enough, but it was during a really like hard time writing together because we struggled with finding the new direction after an album called This Is Goodbye. So me and I didn't really know where to go from there. We tried out different demos and they all just, no success at all. Couldn't work on it. It just didn't sound good. And then I showed him this and it was just clicked just like that. And he said that this is it. This is new sound, you know? And all of a sudden, just 30 minutes, we just knocked out the verse and the chorus on vocals and melodies and everything, recorded at them. And so it's hard to say. Sometimes it is good to kind of just work through it and keep your head down and keep developing this idea. And sometimes it might be good to not take it too seriously. I think every way is different in that way.
Totally. So what can someone do to write better songs?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's a really good question, actually. I think there is only one thing that can help you, and it's try to do more stuff. You know, try to write more music. Inspire yourself with new things, new sounds, new art forms. Even, you know, but it's really tricky to say like what makes a good song, right? There's not really one recipe for it, so there can't really be one solution for it either, I guess. But I really believe in trying to spend as much time as possible and find your own thing, really. And we're living in an age these days where I think authenticity and being able to do something that is unique and to do something that is yours is so much more valuable than being able to write a radio hit or something like this, because that for me, a lot of people can do, you know, really. But there are very few people who are able to do what you do. And I believe it's important I try to more and more not look at myself as just a guitarist or instrumentalist. I want to maybe try to look at myself as a stylist in this way. Like, what is my style? And try to develop this and spend as much time as I can with that.
Yeah, I think regardless of how you write or what you write or what you're inspired by, any of that, just writing more kind of the answer, right? It's kind of, I feel like every really good writer I know or have watched interviews with always says you just have to do it often. And just keep, even when it's not good, even when you don't feel like it, just keep doing it.
Yeah, you know, and doing it maybe sometimes when you don't feel like it, I don't know, it has to be something that brings you joy, and it can't always be fun. You know, I've had sessions and so where I just felt like, oh my god, like, can we be finished for today? Because we're not there. But we tried it today. You can never know when the magic is there, sort of. But I do agree with you. I agree that you kind of have to do it more and enjoy the process. Keep it fun. I think maybe that's one of the important part. I remember when we were starting out as a band and wrote like the first album and so, and we were hanging out with other local bands and so, and we discussed songwriting. I remember something that some of them said. They said, oh man, I just hate writing music. And that's horrible, right?
Songwriting. Really? That's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that was more about they hated the pressure of writing the music.
Okay.
I think it was more about this, you know, that oh, it's a session. Like, okay, I've opened up my Cubase or my Pro Tools or whatever it is, you know, and I got my guitar and it's go time. Let's go. And, you know,
mm-hmm. Write something great.
That was something great, you know?
Yeah.
Because now it's here and now we're all together. You know, we're struggling to find time for this. And, you know, we got to make it good again. And I think maybe that's just what scares you off a little bit, the pressure and the fear of messing up.
Well, that really, that whole writing for the trash concept is actually about that exact thing, is to remove. It's not that you're trying to write a joke or really write something terrible. It's more that you don't care about the outcome.
Yeah.
You don't get into that. We're here now, write something great. Like, you just stop thinking that way.
Mm. And that's wonderful, isn't it? And you can just, isn't that just the purest art form, sort of? It can just end up to be anything, really. And it's just, I think this is maybe when songwriting or any sort of creation, if it's just like writing in the terms of writing a novel, or if it can be painting, whatever it is, and it's just sort of like letting it flow and getting the flow out there. It's important, and not judging anything. And you know, I have a friend here, not so much in touch anymore, and she had this other sort of ability to create. You know, she was maybe not into music or so, but other sorts of art form. And it could just be anything, really. It could just be writing it in a textbook, or just doodling in a you know, on a piece of paper or something. And she was really talented also, but just ask, okay, what are you writing for? What are you creating for? Nothing. I'm just doing it for myself, you know? I'm just drawing or so. And that's great, isn't it?
That's tough. I am a little jealous of that.
Yeah.
Because it's always been hard for me to just sit down and create for the sake of creating. There's always some sort of a thing it's for. An album or something too. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I know that if I write a good part here, it's probably going to end up on something, you know, if it's good, right? Otherwise, it just, you know, I trash it or something. But normally, yes, of course, it's sort of that association I just have these days, that if it's a good song, okay, it will be making it on the album or so. But there's nothing wrong with that either. But my point being is that important to enjoy it, important to feel that it's giving you something, you know, and there's this interesting thing, you know, when you're just in that, when you're in this zone, sort of say, and what that gives to you, because I believe that creating something, writing something is also really good for you, you know, mentally and spiritually. And I think it's important to enjoy going to this place and not being afraid of the pressure there.
I completely agree. So being that you're very writing focused, where does guitar playing, like the actual technical part of it, the keeping up with it, all that stuff, where does that fit in for you?
Well, I've sort of developed that. I developed on my own. I never took any lessons or so. Some people would say maybe that's not true, because obviously I grew up with the internet, so I learned a bunch of stuff online, but I never went to take, like, I'm not a theoretical musician at all. And everything that I discovered and how I developed my style was, of course, first and foremost, listening to your idols. And I think for me, it was more like listening to my favorite bands and my favorite artists, and then trying to write something that sounded like that, because I was not really able to play like them. So I wrote something that is maybe almost as good or so, or at least I thought so at that point in my life. And for me, it has sort of been coming up with an idea. It used to be that I had an idea that I was not really capable of playing so well, you know, and then I sort of had to sit down with a metronome and slow it down and then try to speed it up. And so, and that's the way I developed. And writing and recording has been a huge part for me as in my development as a guitarist. My first experience was, you know, when you realize that you're not good enough and that you need to learn new things or that you need to practice or so, was the first time I was supposed to record. It was the first demo. Went into the studio, and I was, you know, that was before I had my own home studio set up. And so this is a long time ago. And you start doing your first takes on material that you wrote and that you rehearsed with the guys, and you thought it was all good. And so, sure. And the producer just said, okay, let's do it again. Let's take one more. And I was like, yeah, Aaron, maybe we should let Alex try here a bit. It's our other guitarist, you know, and then he just nails it. And by that time, you get a really harsh realization, because nobody had ever told me that, man, you need to practice this or that. It was something that I needed to realize and experience. And maybe I think having been through that, where I realized it, where you felt it, someone else told you and showed you that, man, you kind of suck. Actually, it's hard. It's tough, you know, that can't break your confidence.
It's great lesson, though.
Yeah, it's a fantastic lesson, because that changed me, you know. And from there on, it was really, I was very disciplined, and it's in a completely different way. I remember I lived in a small studio apartment, one room flat at the time, you know, and I barely had any space to sit with my guitar. And so, but I had a small little amp and so I used to sit on my coffee table, and I practiced for at least, like, minimum it was 1 hour a day with the metronome, or if I could do 2-3 hours a day, that was great, you know. I tried to balance with my side job that I had at the time. So, and I did that for more than a year and so, and I continued doing so afterwards as well. And next time I went into the studio, it just, you know, I recorded almost all the guitars, because I had reached that level. And for me, it was really listening to myself, that, because I knew that it had to sound good for the recording, you know. So it was all about recording, listening back, like, just to know what you sound like. And I think this is something that a lot of the instrumentalists that are not having studio experience, that they lack. They don't know what they sound like, really. And I think that's important to notice at an early stage.
Man, when you went to the studio and had that reality check of not being as good or as tight as you thought you were, there was the possibility that you could have gotten discouraged and just quit. I've seen that happen with lots of people. What was it, like, what were you thinking, like, mentally or emotionally, that it kept you coming back for more? Like, why do you think that you didn't just quit, and why do you think that you decided to just get better?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's such an early state in our career, if you will. As I said, my first time experiencing a real studio. And
I mean, I've seen people quit over it. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
A lot of people quit after that experience.
Mm. Or because
bands break up. Yeah.
Mm. It's tough. You know, it breaks your confidence. Music is important to you. And your parts were important to you. You wrote them, and you're supposed to be able to play them. And so, and you don't want someone to say, like, you got to move over here. Like, go sit on the couch. Someone else has to do it for you. I mean, that's a hard experience. It's tough. And even at that point, it's an interesting question here, because there was really nothing to lose. Like, today it would have been a different thing. Like, we have good thing going, and we have a couple of albums, we have an audience, and we have tours and release, etc. Back then we had nothing, and nobody knew who we were, and nobody cared even. No one was going to care about this demo that we're going to put out. But I just feel like when it didn't really matter so much. It didn't really matter what I had to lose or not, because I just loved that. I loved doing this. It gave me purpose. It gave me purpose to be in a band or feel like, hi, I'm Harold, and I am a guitarist, a songwriter, a musician, a band member, or whatever. And it's part of who I am and what I wanted to do, really, even at that point. You know, I love music more than anything else, you know? And I think then maybe also it's part of your personality. If you believe that things are possible, if you believe that you can change yourself, and by that, changing other things also, like your future, for example, and that the world is bendable, if you will, if you just need to make an effort and just decide that you have to figure this one out. You got to figure it out if you want it bad enough. And I think I do believe that things are possible, and I always have. You know, I don't want to be, I believe that it's always going to be up to you to sort that out also. I do not believe in blaming someone else around it or whatever. I could have excused it. I could have excused it saying that, yeah, but this producer is talking shit or whatever, or he doesn't understand what it should sound like, or I didn't have time enough to practice. Nobody told me this or that. There are always excuses, and there's nothing to... Don't make excuses, really. You know, make changes. That's what I just decided to do, really. And I never felt like that I'm done practicing or so. Of course not. It's just at a different point here where I need to devote my time into other things, you know, in the band. As, you know, we're being independent, and we're writing all the songs on our own, and we're taking care of business and whatnot. But I believe that I'm kind of confident in my capacity these days. I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not good at. I know what I like to get better on, what I frankly don't really mind so much that I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, that you can bend reality to your will if you just figure it out and care enough.
I think so. Yeah. And that you're able to also, okay, it's something I'm not capable of doing right now. Well, maybe not now, but what in 6 months? Or what if we're looking at 1 year perspective or so? Like, what do you need to achieve this? And for me, it was a very clear goal. I wanted to be able to record my guitar parts for the next album. So, and I believe that it was a great experience being there and trying to figure out like what this guy or producer or engineer, like what he was looking for, what kind of techniques or sounds or so that was like, what kind of playing sounds good really in a different way than I thought.
I want to focus in on something you mentioned also that I think is very important, is that a lot of musicians don't know what they actually sound like. And I've noticed that too. I think a lot of it is because they don't record themselves. And so all they're hearing is themselves in the room. And when they hear themselves in the room, they're hearing a combination of things. They're hearing the pick sound, they're hearing, which makes it sound more percussive. They're feeling it. So they're kind of, there's this auditory thing that happens when you're physically touching something that's vibrating. So they're kind of hearing it with a little bit more resonance through their body. And then they're also hearing it with whatever shitty sound they've got dialed that masks mistakes. So you have a lot, plus they're focusing on playing. So, and you can only focus really on a thing at a time. If you're focused on playing, you're not listening as much as if you weren't playing. So I think never recording themselves and only judging based off of what they sound like, what they think they sound like in the bedroom or even in their practice space or whatever, I think that it's very, very misleading. And yeah. Then when they are recorded for the first time, it's a shock. It's a big, big shock. And I think that actually recording yourself often and analyzing not just how well you played, but what do you sound like? Because these great guitar players, man, the ones that I've recorded or hung out with or been in a band with, the way that people hear them sounding, like on those records they love, that's what they actually sound like. That's like when they sit down and play through something, like they'll do that thing. That thing you love is just what they do. That's how they sound. It's crazy, but it is what it is. So you need to sound the way that that you think, basically the way that people think you should sound, or the way that you think you should sound, should be something that comes out of the guitar and the gear while you're playing. It's not something that's created afterwards.
It starts with the source. You know, that's just how easy it is. It just starts with the source, with your hand and your pick or whatever it is. And I think maybe in this way, this is helpful, you know, with the very few elements that we spoke about in the beginning here. For example, when I'm writing, I keep my options very limited because I want it to come through. I don't want to try to mask my own guitar playing with something else, but with millions of layers or whatever it could be, or arrangement. So it has to be that, it has to be there in the very beginning, I think so. And it really starts with the source.
So what do you think guitar players should focus on, rhythm or lead?
Rhythm. Of course, yeah, I definitely think you should focus on rhythm. It's sort of like your foundation of being able to understand tempo and groove, and so it's super important. It depends on which kind of music you're playing, obviously, but I believe that you need to be able to play rhythm really well, and I think if you understand that and you can play tight, which of course lead is also about these aspects, but maybe not in the same way. I mean, it's not a coincidence that drummers seem to have a talent for learning other instruments more easily because they already have the rhythm part in themselves. You know, it's already there, the backbone, really. And I think this is such a basic component of if you're going to be an instrumentalist, you know, if you don't want to be a singer. But it's all about which style you're in. For me personally, yes, rhythm is everything, really. It's really there. It sets the foundation. It sets like it ties everything together, really. And it lets everything that should be in the front, with being it guitar or leads or something else, vocals or violins or synth stuff, it makes that look good because it's strong. The foundation is strong there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, lead guitar players who don't focus on rhythm are not good lead guitar players. Yeah. All of the really good lead guitar players are really good at rhythm too. And I've never ever heard a good lead guitar player who was bad at rhythm.
No, and I think it's a lot of the times, if you take people are talking about Jimi Hendrix or something, we forgot to talk about the big names. Like, oh yeah, the solos and the leads. So Jimi Hendrix playing really complex rhythm parts, you know, and singing over it. It's like, wow. And then some of those parts, that's impressive. That's not a lot of people who could do that, you know? So I think, of course, it's really about what people might see with their eyes, and they might confuse that a little bit with what the real talent is or what the real skill is. And I believe that, yeah, focus and develop your rhythms. And so if you can't play leads, that's cool, of course. But I never felt too... I'm just never so persuaded by that. I mean, of course, I liked to play solos and stuff, but it hasn't ever really been my call. I wouldn't say so.
Which is fine. I mean, it sounds to me like your thing is more about writing, more about writing and creating.
Yeah, I think so. I would definitely say so, but definitely my instrument is guitar for sure. But I would agree. I would agree saying so. I do love just sit there and play, of course. And it's something that I sometimes can miss doing that. And sometimes I do it just for being able to enjoy it. And I don't think I would ever stop enjoying it just to play my instrument in that way. But I think, I've maybe been more, I would say it was more meaningful me to listen to the song and being inspired of what the guitar is providing to that song, you know, in its full form, than just going in very deep and just looking at the instrument.
You know, I do think, I want to say something though, just so people don't get the wrong idea. I don't think that just because someone gets good at soloing that they're necessarily a bad writer at all. Like, I know some lead guitar players that are great writers. It's what it is more that, like, we only have 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
And we have to choose what we want to focus on. And, you know, everyone has a different amount of time they can devote to it. Or, you know, some people write very quickly. Some people take a long time. Like, it really is down to the individual. But lots of times you will get lead guitar players who are not good at writing, not because they're not talented, or if they were to develop their writing, they'd be very good at it. But they chose to sit there for 8 hours a day for all these years just working on their lead guitar playing. And so they're not lesser than other musicians at all. I mean, they just decided to specialize. And so I think it just comes down to the individual and what they want to focus on, and whatever it is that you want to focus on, just be awesome at it, I think.
Yeah. Go fully into that. Find out what your path is, really. If you can, and there's nothing really, there's not a one-fit-all solution, you know. It's really not. If you're a lead guitar and you're a great soloist, then just do that. Go ahead, just go as far as you can with this. If you're more of a songwriter, whatever it can be, and maybe think the rhythm is more interesting or whatnot, then go in that direction, really. And I think we need both, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love the virtuosos. They're great to play with.
Yeah, of course. Of course. It's fantastic. It's fantastic, really. And they're needed in different kinds of music. They are definitely needed in our music. I'm not so sure. Maybe at some point it would be nice to have a feature solo by someone that is just absolutely incredible, of course. But in general, like for the essence of our songs and our sound, and so I don't really see that as a major element.
No, it sounds like you guys have it very, very figured out. So we're almost out of time. I just have a couple quick questions that I'd like to just find out from people. So what do you think, 6, 7, or 8 strings?
6, of course.
Nice. and what about real amps or Sims?
Oh, real amps, definitely. We recorded the last 2 albums with real amps, and I really don't want to go back. Of course, naturally, I live in an apartment. I need to be realistic. I don't want to, you know, disturb my neighbors too much. And obviously live as well, it just makes things easier not having to carry around cabs or whatnot over different continents. So yes, we use Sims, but yes, for recording and the sound feeling, real.
And what's the first song you learned?
The first song, full song or just riff?
You tell me.
First riff was Iron Man on 1 string. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good one to start with.
Yeah, of course. Of course. On acoustic guitar.
Sounds about right. What about full song?
Full Song was probably, it must have been, I remember being giving a tabs book for Christmas sometime when I was maybe 14 or something, when I just started playing guitar, and I got an electric guitar and a chord book, like tabs book. So it's probably Kiss Song, I would guess, because I was really liking that classic stuff. So I would say could have been Deuce by Kiss, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that was a song that I played back in the days.
Interesting. Most people will say a Metallica song or something. I haven't heard someone say a Kiss song yet. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it was at that age. I was probably, because we were talking full songs in this way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fairly easy to learn when you're a beginner. It's fairly easy to understand. It's not rocket science stuff. And of course, Metallica was huge influence later. It was, and I knew how to play a bunch of those songs too. But no, I think it was also the whole spectacle around Kiss in general, you know, cool songs and so, but I think it was just the everything they did that was just blowing my mind as a young kid.
Yeah, it's to this day pretty nuts what they did. And yeah. I still the way they look, it I've always thought it's funny. The way they look doesn't match the way they sound at all.
No. No, of course not. You would. I don't know what people thought back in the day, but if that band would have come around today looking like this, I would think some sort of satanic black metal, future glam or something like this. But I think there are also other acts such as Ghost. Ghost have a completely mm-hmm. different sound compared to their looks, I would say. But it works. You know, it just works, really. They took it and they made it their own.
I agree. I think it's cool where it's not what you would expect, but it's also not, it's not so far apart that it doesn't make any sense at all. Like, you know, with Ghost, they're still playing, they're still within the, you know, the metal umbrella. They're just kind of playing like a more classic version of it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I think it makes it interesting.
I agree completely.
Yeah, we just moved into summertime over here. So right now it's 6 p.m., uh-huh. Which is fantastic. So I guess we'll have maybe one, 2 more hours of sunlight approximately. But yeah, soon going to be over where you are. So that's cool. Looking forward to coming back to the States.
Yeah, that's right. And when's the last time you came here?
Actually, our first visit ever to America was in late November and December 2023. We had never been over before. Never. And so it's quite recent, actually, but we just chose to just to try to do something different. We struggled to get a good touring opportunity over there. So eventually, long story short, we told our agent, like, you know what? Just book us a headline tour. Let's just do what we always did. Let's go. Let's believe things are possible here. And let's do a short run, just, you know, 1 week approximately, and fairly good driving distance. So we just did Northeast Coast. And funny enough, it turned out really well. It was actually a big success for us. And the tour was going so well. Some venues got upgraded like even twice, which was incredible to see. So we figured like, okay, we have to just do it again, right? We got to come back soon because mm-hmm. there's so much more to see. So many more places to go.
Yeah.
So,
that's a nice and pleasant surprise, is never playing a territory and then having to upgrade the venues.
Yeah. Yeah. That was amazing, really. We could never really expect that. And seeing that some of the capacities that we were doing is equivalent to what we're doing here in Europe, sometimes even bigger. And we had never been over. It's a new part of the world, really on the other end of the world, really. And we've been doing the grind over here for years and years and so. But we just believe that there is an audience there that should be waiting for us. We see it on social media and whatnot. And it's just incredible to have this door open and feeling like, wow, okay, now we have somewhere else to go and play.
So this is I didn't realize that. So this is your first full U.S. tour.
Yeah, it is. So we're bringing the new album. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. For some reason, I don't know. I just figured that you had been here more. Well, congrats first of all on that and the
thank
album.
Thank you. Really, yeah, that's gonna be something. Really, it's quite historical. There's so many places we gotta go for the first time. I mean, every city is new. We've never been there before. So yeah,
it's with European bands coming here. It's definitely hit or miss. It's very hard to know, really, because you'll have bands that are massive in Europe and nobody listens to them here, or the opposite, where they're just kind of doing okay and then people love them here. And then there's bands that are massive everywhere. but you never really know. You never really know if it's going to translate over. And there's some surprises too with some bands you would never think that the American audience would like, that they love. So you really only find out by trying it. And so it's good. It's good that it's working.
Yeah, it's incredible. It went so much better than we could ever have imagined, obviously. And of course, we've seen that you can look at your stats online, your social media following, your streaming, and your web shop sales or whatever, just seeing where are the people who support us, you know, where are they? And of course, the majority will naturally be in America, because it's such a huge country. So it's sort of like having another Europe, you know? So obviously, the majority will be over there. But it doesn't mean that you're able to sell tickets or that people want to come out to see your show. And you don't really know if you need to build that up and build a request somehow or so. And it just seemed that we had that, which was just amazing for us to be able to discover. The first kind of rooms we were supposed to play was just small. We said, oh, I don't know, let's book some tours, some rooms here on the tour. 200 capacities or something. We have no idea what to expect. And it just sold out in 48 hours. It's like, wow, okay. So let's try to find some bigger rooms. And yeah, we were fortunate enough to do that. And all of a sudden, it just felt like, okay, here we are, actually. Here we are in America. And we have a crowd here. And they do want to come out and support us and see the show. Yeah, unbelievable.
So do you think that... that these days to build a band, it's, you know, the old school thinking was you have to tour all the time and build slowly. Now it seems to me, and tell me if you agree or what you think, I think you build on the internet first and then you tour.
Yes and no. I believe it all depends on what kind of band you are and what your strengths are. I mean, sometimes I've been seeing a support band or something, or a band on a festival never really heard of. Maybe I heard of them, but I didn't know. And you were just blown away and wonder, like, what am I looking at here? What am I hearing? This is incredible. And that's the kind of band you want to be, right? Of course, uh-huh. you want to be a live band. But I do believe that building something online is of course, a very natural way to go, because who else are you going to sell tickets to? I mean, if you don't have an audience, they want to come and see the show. But on the other hand, I think it's important to establish yourself as a live act, you know, a band that can play live and that is good live and that people want to see live also. But for us, I really believe in building yourself online and building your following and reaching more people is really key. But maybe that just comes from the fact that we haven't really done a lot of support stuff. We have never really gotten the opportunity. We've always been kind of headline, you know? That's how we started. That's how it was in the very beginning. I wanted to tour really, really bad. And we got an opportunity. We went to do some underground shows in first shows out of Sweden ever, went down to like freaking Bosnia and Croatia or so, played in pubs because that's where the only place we could go to. And that was just the, you know, incredible. I thought it was so much freaking fun, and I loved it so, so much. And I just didn't want it to end there because we didn't have an agent or a record label or a network or anything. So I just decided that, you know what, I want this really bad. I want to have the experience in my life, and I wanted to do this. So I decided that I needed to learn how to book a tour. And so I did. And so I booked the band for quite some time and got us out on the road. And that's how we actually built our first fan base. People who happened to come out to those small little gigs because they heard it was something happening. They thought, you know, we were pretty good. And so and for us, it was important. It was. And we could also show that we were a small band that were able to tour. And I think that's how we got picked up by a record label. And so now we're independent. But that at that time, it was probably good for us to be. So.
Yeah. So those little shows, how would you get the word out about them?
You didn't.
You didn't. You did. Okay.
You had maybe back in those days, you had like four support bands, local support bands or something coming to play with you. And they would maybe pull a few people and their friends or something. And, or just sometimes you played somewhere and it was like three drunks and a dog in the crowd or so, you know.
Least there's a dog, you know.
At least there's a dog.
Someone to hang out with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting though, because I think that getting the word out is something that so many people don't really understand. And so they read up or they try to study what really successful bands do, or they look at different things that they'll use, methods or tactics or software, but none of that really matters. A lot of the stuff that bigger bands do or use, they can only use it because people already care. Like those things work when there's a demand. When there's no demand, that stuff doesn't work. And so it's kind of a mystery as to how to initially get the word out. But I really think it comes down to the few people you can get to check it out, you better make a good impression on them.
Yeah, you have to. And you have to really try to, at an early stage, believe in yourself and what you do, and believing that you need to do your own thing. And of course, I was also looking up to my idols and trying to do their thing. But in the beginning, the few people who follow you probably do it because of like what you do, really. And I think as soon as possible, try to figure out what makes you and what it makes your style unique, and then just keep feed the beast really as much as you can, because that's the only thing that is going to set you apart, really. It's funny you mentioned that thing that a lot of acts or younger aspiring artists are looking at. What do the big boys have, or big, you know, artists or girls or whatever it can be? And well, they have this, then we got to do it too. I remember on the first, well, more serious headline tours that we were doing, and so like some local support bands, they were just coming in and they had like Axe FX and they had wireless systems and they had their own wireless microphones and they had everything and they had big racks. And so we just looked at all that stuff and, you know, kind of just, you know, I set mic'd up like my amp, put my amp head, my old Blackstar head on like a beer crate or something, and like, you know, just plugged it in, and it was just rock and roll. Because of course it's cool, you want to sound good live, but choose your priorities, you know. If nobody's coming to see your show, that much doesn't matter. Focus on the right thing first, maybe.
Yeah, I remember those bands coming in with road crews.
Wow.
Local bands with that they'd print laminates for local shows and bring
it
a crew.
It all depends. Yeah, if that makes you feel that you're at another level, or, you know, it's like people who just, I don't know, like people who are not successful, you know, in quotation marks, and still, you know, feel that it's important to fly first class or something, you know. Mm-hmm. I do this because it makes me feel XYZ. You know, this is important to me. It gives me the right sense of like state of mind or something. If I have a road crew or whatever, if I have my Axe FX or whatever it is, then that makes it, you know, it makes me in a position where I'm comfortable. Then if that is helping you go, it just wasn't our way. We didn't upgrade to those things until quite late. You know, we played with monitors for a long time, really.
Yeah, I mean, look, people, I agree. People should do whatever they want, whatever makes them feel good. But I think that also, what's also true is that you need to decide what to prioritize. And if you're prioritizing vanity things, things that appeal to your vanity and your pride, kind of falsely, instead of focusing on what will actually in the long run upgrade you, I just think it's a misprioritization and wasteful.
Yeah, it's always, I think it's, I've learned just to try to look at things in the bigger picture, really. Look at the big picture, really, and try to see yourself from like an outside perspective, like where you are, what you need at this point, and not what you, it's hard to know, right? It's hard to know, but I think it's quite clear to say that just because I buy expensive gear or whatever can be expensive interfaces or something, it doesn't mean that I'm able to write better songs or pull more people to my show, really. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something we need to look over that is unrelated to the music. You know, maybe it's just our form of communication, our language online, you know, how we present ourselves to the audience, how we market the tour, like how we tour, or whatever it can be. It can be other things that you might need to look for also.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Harold, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for taking the time, and thank you for your patience with the internet issues.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, likewise. Anytime, man.